You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super honored and excited for today's guest. Eric Huberman is the founder and CEO of Hawk Media, the fastest growing marketing consultancy in the United States. Initially launched in 2014, Hawk Media has been valued at over $75 million and has grown from 7 to over 150 employees in 3 locations of Los Angeles, New York, and Boston. The company has also serviced over 2,000 brands of all sizes, ranging from startups like Tamara Mellon, Sio Beauty, Bottle Keeper, to household names like Red Bull, Verizon Wireless, and Alibaba. He's a serial entrepreneur, just like you guys, a marketing expert. Eric is a sought-after thought leader in the world of digital marketing, entrepreneurship, sales, and business. Prior to Hawk Media, he has founded and grown and sold 2 successful e-commerce companies. Huberman is also the recipient of numerous honors and awards, including the Forbes 30 Under 30, CSQ 40 Under 40, Inc. Magazine's Top 25 Marketing Influencers, and the Best in North America's Marketing Executive of the Year. He's also a regular contributor to major publications like Forbes, Entrepreneur, and CSQ, and he's also a well-known keynote speaker. So I'm excited to welcome Eric Huberman to Making Bank today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
For sure. Well, I guess tell us a little bit about, like, how'd you get started as an entrepreneur? I know for me, I was like 10, 12 years old, and yeah. You know, was it when you were a kid? Did it happen like later on in life? Like, what was all that about?
Yeah, I always liked the idea of making money. And so like 6 years old, I'd say my first small entrepreneurial endeavor was walking around my house with a garbage bag and deciding the things I didn't think my parents needed anymore and putting them in a bag and then trying to sell my parents' stuff door to door. Definitely did that. Didn't really like that experience in terms of like, I ended up bringing a friend and then having to split it with him, which didn't seem fair because it was my parents' stuff and a whole bunch of stuff that I just didn't do that again. But when I was 8, I wanted to get an electric guitar. So I told my dad like, hey, can I have an electric guitar? And my dad's like, yeah, go get a fucking job verbatim. And I was like, okay. So I started trying to sell lemonade because that's what an 8-year-old does. And I didn't make enough money. It took too long. I was making pennies and it was like, this sucks. So I saw Beanie Babies, the craze starting to start. And I was like, hey, maybe I can buy some nice, you know, cool Beanie Babies and sell them, make some money. And over the course of a year, I ended up making a few $1,000 as an 8-year-old buying and selling Beanie Babies. And so bought the guitar, bought a BMX, saved money for a car. It was a good time. And so that was really the first entrepreneurial endeavor that I did. And then really, like, I was set up to become an entrepreneur in a lot of beneficial ways. Like, my dad's an entrepreneur. His dad was. I took a class, or a friend of mine's dad in 8th grade taught our class entrepreneurship and took us around to local businesses and introduced us to the owners. So like, it always was like in the back of my mind, just like the thing people did. And so then I got a couple jobs during high school that I got basically screwed around with by a small business owner that it was, these were, you know, a local restaurant in a small town and a local health food store that I was like, God, I hate working for other people because they all, you know, I'm a victim of their opinion and their thoughts versus like what the actual outcome. So sure. I knew I'd get into either sales or entrepreneurship because I had to, you know, control my own destiny. And yeah, long story short, ended up getting out of college, had, you know, learned a lot and started a few things during college, went into real estate exactly a week before the whole banking industry collapsed, made $350 that year, which basically propelled me into figuring out something else. I couldn't get a job. So I started looking at starting my own things, started an online music company, ran it for 2 years, got it to profitability, passed it off to another CEO, and then built and sold 2 consecutive subscription e-commerce companies that led me to realizing how broken the marketing industry is when it comes to brands and how ridiculous it is that 99% of marketing agencies are completely full of shit. And the few that are good get really expensive, want long contracts, high minimums. So the end result is great marketing is inaccessible. And I thought that was the broken point. That was what we needed to fix. And so literally our mission statement's accessibility to great marketing for everyone. How can we be the best marketing agency out there and also be accessible? And so that has been our driving force for almost 8 years now. And at this point, we're like 220 people and manage marketing for over 600 brands and have a venture arm where we invest in a lot of marketing technology and a capital arm where we give working capital loans to our clients. And we host e-commerce week with the city of LA. We host the annual brand awards called the Brandies. We just, yeah, constantly looking for new ways to build out sort of that ecosystem.
No, that's awesome. And that's, you know, I think kind of growing up that way, you know, kind of helped prepare you, obviously, for what you're doing now. Because I grew up, my parents weren't entrepreneurs, but had kind of like you, that entrepreneur thing, started selling stuff. And then, you know, 14 started, I wanted to buy the Commodore Amiga computer, didn't have enough saved up. So I figured out, hey, wholesale, you know, get set up as a dealer. And so that kind of what got me started. But what were some of kind of the big kind of takeaways you learned growing up that you've been able to pass through and utilize today to grow, you know, Hawk Media and everything?
Yeah, in full transparency, the biggest one is my dad. I love him. We get along great, but he was a very volatile guy. And the difference in language that I used communicating with him growing up would actually trigger a positive or negative response. He was very different. Just like, can I go to a friend's house versus I want to go to a friend's house was the difference between, yeah, go for it. And no. So it was like, I was that really, and sincerely, I credit that with like, I have a pretty good natural talent for sales because sure. I'm sensitive to my word choice. And I think that does a lot. And that combined with, I went to a really alternative hippie school that basically to their own regret probably taught me to the lack of to frankly question authority, not respect it. So I grew up not ever thinking that someone was above me or that anyone was better than anyone else, including myself. So it wasn't
sure.
The other way, which meant that like there was never a room I was in that I felt out of place. There was never a situation where I felt like, oh my God, like I don't get starstruck often, once in a while.
Right.
But it's so when I started building my business, like even like my last businesses, I was young, but even with Hawk, I started at 26. And okay. I'd been selling, you know, multi-billionaires on why I could do their marketing. And I never had a thought, a doubt in the world. Like the whole, what do they call it? A lot of CEOs deal with this. They feel like a fraud.
I just was reading about that again the other day. So I was like,
and so many CEOs talk about this. Imposter syndrome.
That's imposter syndrome. There you go.
And so many deal with it. And I'm like, I don't, not because I don't think that it's crazy that I am where I am, but because I realize everyone's an imposter. So like, who gives a shit? Like everyone's figuring it out. No one's that smart. Like, you know, do I have more knowledge in marketing than most people? Yep. And especially at this point, but even when I was starting, I'd built three digital companies. I knew more about digital than almost anyone that was coming to me. So I had no problem having the confidence there, which served me massively. So it's a combination of like not being afraid of that authority or that successful person and being like, yeah, cool, they got lucky. Like that's literally, and to this day, how I feel. I'm like, my favorite thing to hear when people say, well, what drove your success? It's like, well, I worked hard. It's like, fuck you. We all work hard. Everyone's got 24 hours in a day. If you're working, you know, 16, 18 hours a day, you're capped out. Maybe you can work 20 and you're one of those people that needs 4 hours of sleep, but that's it. It's the great equalizer. You don't know one works harder than each other. Like there are people that are lazy and they're going to have a hard time being successful. Working hard is just an equalizer. And then being smart enough, you're being Mensa or being, you know, having a 200 IQ doesn't make you any more successful. The studies prove that being smart enough is important, but that's again, a pretty baseline thing. And then it's luck. You got to work hard, be smart enough, and then it's just timing and luck and what circumstance. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There's things that like part of the being smart is realizing where you should double down on and what efforts you should double down on and that kind of stuff. But like, I really do believe that. So whenever I was in the room with a billionaire, I'm like, wow, they were born at the right time and did the right things. Like, good for them. Like now I'm going to see if I can help them. And so I see a lot of people have that imposter syndrome that really holds them back. And I just never experienced it because again, it wasn't that I'm great. It's that no one's that great.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting way to look at it. I mean, I know I've never, for like you, I've never had that, imposter syndrome, that feel, you know, been comfortable going into a room and just talking and, you know, knowing what you know, or kind of hang out and listen and see what you can pick up.
To be clear, there's many, like those guys know a lot more than me, they have more experience, but it was just never like, I never thought that it was never godlike, so to speak. It was just like, yeah, spent 20 years with at a high level of success. They probably have a lot to teach me. And there are people that I absolutely go to for advice that I credit with being advisors to me because of their life experience and aptitude. But yeah, it was just never intimidating for me to be in a room with successful people.
For sure. And you know, you mentioned kind of that mentorship or, you know, people you go to. What, I guess, what were you looking for when you did that? And then how do you utilize those? How have you utilized those people to help you grow your business or and or personally?
Yeah, it's I never liked the idea of a mentor because sure. I think you inherit their bad and good traits. And again, yeah. What worked for them may not work for you. And I've had some of the worst advice from some of the smartest, most successful people I know. So I don't like having one single mentor or a specific person I call my mentor. I have people that I go to for specific types of advice. Meaning like I have people that I really respect in sales and growth and marketing that I go to for that. I have people that I really respect on the interpersonal side that I go to for that. I have people that I respect in HR. I have people that I respect depending on where the problem's coming from, financial decisions, life decisions. I have a couple people in my life that I just are basically my bullshit radar where I'll go and tell them how the way I'm thinking about a problem or a situation or, you know, something that I'm looking at. And I run it by them and I'm like, am I thinking about this the right way? Or am I just completely bullshitting myself? And it depends what I need that I have different people that I go to. And those people change too, because they're, as we grow, as my
right.
builds, as my own aptitude and ability builds, there's people that frankly you grow past. And just for anyone that's growing, there are people that are not going to grow at the same rate, and no matter how fast that is. And so that's part of it too.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, I think that's important is knowing, you know, as you're growing, you know, when it's time to move on and, you know, find somebody that may fulfill that next role or that next piece that you need. Because we do a lot of times working with the different mentors or associates or whatever you want to call them. I mean, those people that you're getting advice from or bouncing ideas and things off of. And you do go past that and you got to know, hey, we're still friends, but you know, here's where I'm at today and yeah. here's where I need to be and everything moving forward. So.
Yeah. And I've never been blunt with those people. Honestly, I just stop asking. Oh, like, hey, by the way, I've taken you off my advisor list. Like, it's just like, right. I just don't call him as often. I call him I like to keep friends. I usually call and check in, but I don't call him as often to ask questions about my business. And then a ton of organizations that I'm a member of that are incredibly valuable, YPO being one of them, where I have my group of seven people I meet with every month to dive into hyper confidential personal, professional, family life. What's going on? What am I dealing with? What are they dealing with? To be sounding boards, etc. Those kind of things that, like, you know, again, depending on what we want out of life, there's people that are super happy finding a way to coast and then coasting. And then there's people that want to, you know, grind and get everything out of life. And I'm one of those. I'm one of the people that can't sit still, that personally and professionally want to keep going on every aspect of my life. I'm a hobby junkie, I'm a travel junkie, and I'm a business junkie. And I like growing things. So I'm always looking for new ways to develop.
Awesome. And what's one or two big pieces of advice that you've pulled over the years from your different people that you've learned from or pulled advice from?
Yeah, the best piece
that's made a big change for you, like an impact.
Yeah, easy number one answer is I'll try to tell a long story even quicker than I ever have, which is I had an employee very early that bailed on a Monday because he had met a girl over the weekend and decided to go to Hawaii and marry her. And there was a lot longer process here because there were like 3 days of trying to get a hold of him and him bailing on my clients and everyone almost firing me. And this guy hangs up. He's like, this is the happiest day of my life, and hangs up on me, like, crazy situation. And I'm like, I have five employees at the time. And like, he was managing half my revenue. Like, it was a bad day. And so my business partner stepped up and was like, I'm going to help take over these clients and we'll figure this out. And I leave work and I called my dad to tell him the story. And I tell him a 5-minute version of what I just told, like the details and everything. And I'm
right.
freaking out. My dad goes, oh yeah, that shit happens all the time. I got to run, talk to you later, quick. Hangs up on me. And I'm like, it took me 2 years or 3 years, I'd say, to really take that advice, which is, as a business owner, that shit happens all the time. You're always going to be dealing with problems. You're always going to have friction. You're always going to have some fire at the business. The life of the business is always threatened. It's COVID. It's taxes. It's getting a lawsuit. Whatever it is, you're going to deal with it. And once you accept that, running a business is 800 times more fun. Because then when that hits, which is all the time. You're always that you're the owner. You're going to deal with the biggest problems.
For sure.
If you're trying anything, you're going to make mistakes and you're going to have problems. And if you're doing well, you're going to be a target. So like, it's always going to be something. But once you accept that and you take a deep breath and you move on, then it like, that's the only downside of running a business is that piece. And once you accept that, like, things are volatile, things are crazy, and buck up because it's what you signed up for. And it's, you can always go get a job. If you don't want to be an entrepreneur, go get a job. But like, you hear about the immense amounts of like depression and stress as an entrepreneur. It's like, if you let it, like,
right,
don't get over your skis, do the things you want to do. And by the way, if it's that shitty and stressful, just don't do it, go get a job. And so once I realized that and it became like, you know, like hyper ownership over like, I chose this, it's been so fun. And by the way, the problems haven't gotten less. The bigger the business, the bigger the problems. And the biggest realization that nailed it after that piece of advice was I was sitting there and I was like watching something on like Apple and Tim Cook dealing with, I think it was trade wars in China or something. It was that, it was, I think earlier than that, but they had like trade wars and then they have COVID and now they have antitrust problems. And I'm like, yeah, biggest company in the world dealing with more shit than I'm dealing with. Like, it doesn't end. And it was like almost became a joke where it's like, yeah, as soon as we can solve these problems and everything will be good. It's like, that never fucking happens. No. Keep trying to solve problems. Don't get me wrong. But like, there's no finish line. The finish line is you sell, you retire, you shut it down. Like, that's the finish line, which frankly, for me personally, is none of the three things I just mentioned are things I'm trying to do. So it's like, all right, well, I'm going to be doing this for the rest of my life. So you buck up and get over the problems and learn how to enjoy the whole thing and make, because we only get one shot at life, so you might as well. And again, if I inherently don't like this, then get the fuck out. And that's a really important sort of partial advice I got, but also a realization that has been awesome. Because even when COVID hit, like, it was super stressful for the first couple of weeks, but once I figured out the sort of, once I had a scenario planned out of like, here's what we're going to do depending on where this goes, then it was like, all right, well, this is what I signed up for, now I'm going to figure it out. And it also enabled me to be much more proactive, because COVID definitely hit our business like a lot of people. And it allowed me to be like, well, let's go to war. Because like, now I know, like, we're going to be dealing with problems. And like, I have two options here. I can turtle and guarantee that my business goes down,
right,
or I can go battle for it and see what I can come out with. And thank God we went for it, because we ended up crushing it. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's interesting you say that, is with the challenges and all the things that come up. My wife and I own a pretty big e-com company, and it was like, we just got one thing wrapped up at the end of the year, and we're like, all right, sweet. And going into January, nothing. Right at the end of January, boom.
Yeah.
And then like 25 days later, boom, something again, like legal stupid crap from either California or somewhere. Yeah. And you're like, what? We just got out. And you're like, all right, well, this is just, you know, and it's just, it is what it is. Yep. Like you said, if you get stressed about it, it doesn't help.
No. And like, and again, when you expect that that's coming, like, you get over the thought that it's not good, no, nothing's going to go wrong. And you just assume that shit's going to hit the fan. And we had an employee quit with no notice yesterday that won't even pick up the phone to tell us what's up. Like, just bailed on our clients, just like, thanks, great. Like, we got to now it fucks everyone around him, because now everyone has got to pick up his slack, et cetera. But like, if we didn't expect that stuff to happen, my old team would have been stressed out. We've been scrambling. And instead it's like, all right, what's the plan? Like, of course this happened. We knew this was going to happen. Not this specifically, but something was going to happen. And now it did. So what are we going to do about it?
Awesome. Well, so tell us a little bit about, because I think you said you're around 200 employees.
Yeah.
Is that roughly? So what was it like kind of going from that 10, I guess, 50, and then you got that 100, 200 type? Because it's a different level of leadership and navigation and culture and everything else.
Yeah, it is. The whole company changes every time you double, I'd say, is really what it is. So we started at 7, and it was just a little SWAT team of people that we were all buddies and hung out and helped people with marketing. And then it was 17 by the end of the year. And that's when we needed a little bit of management. We needed someone to help manage some of the other people. And then it was 35, and it was, and I know I'm not actually doubling, just to be clear, but it was 35 the end of year two. And it was like, that's when we needed a little bit of a management layer. And then it was 65, I think, was the next year. And that's when we had full management and different silos and now different things. And honestly, I don't remember when we ended up having like all the infrastructure stuff, because then all of a sudden you need accounting and HR and legal and all the that stuff. And, you know, it's, I'd say management wise, I've never had that much of an issue. because I am a delegator. I'm not the control freak. So like, I have no problem handing it off. I think training managers and managing managers is something that's a constant learning, and then managing executives to manage managers to manage people. Or now we have like four layers. We have like the executives manage the VPs who manage the managers. No, who manage the directors, who manage the managers, who manage the teams. But, and so like that starts to get a little more difficult. And how, yeah. Like, what in communications, you know, sort of scenarios, like, do I communicate directly to the company as a whole, or do I communicate through their management, which is a game of fucking telephone? Like, how do we, those are the things that we are, you know, we're decent at, but we're getting better at. And how to manage executives, because it's very different. Like, we were used to managing managers who need management, but executives, you actually got to give more autonomy and like help them become the owner of that aspect of the business, not tell them what to do. And that's something that I'm still learning. And I think, you know, we actually have our exec offsite yesterday and today. And those are things that I'm still trying to battle with, is like, how do I enable them and support them and give them the reins while also making sure that the overall ship still drives in the direction I want it to. So it's a balance. I think every CEO and, you know, company head battles with, but that's been the different culture wise. It goes from being your little family. Like, we actually talk about it. We went from a family to a sports team.
Mm.
And so the way we articulate that is like, family, nobody gets cut out of a family. Nobody ever, you know, gets like, oh, and you're there to watch out for each other. And sports team, you still are there to watch out for each other, but you're there to win. And that really was a shift in our culture and a shift in our vernacular. We're like, yeah, if you're not performing, you're dragging down everybody else with you. And so I really like that analogy, and we've definitely run with it, with the idea of like, we're all here to build something for ourselves and each other, and we all want to win. And so, you know, it's nice that I'd say the biggest move in our culture, originally we never really had to articulate our core values and our mission statement and all that, because you're sitting around together, like you're all in it together. You don't need to tell people what you're doing. Now that we're bigger, I think it was a couple years ago, we finally defined our mission statement of accessibility to great marketing for everyone, which was perfect, because we had people coming in that were like, well, I only want to work on Nike and Unilever. It's like, yeah, well, you get that opportunity, but that's not what we're about. Like, we have those clients, but we have other ones too. And we're here to like help everyone. And like, people are like, well, then we're just trying to be everything to everyone. I'm like, no, we're not. Like, it's, you know, they'd use these cliches to argue about like what I saw as our mission, because frankly, I hadn't well articulated. Now it's articulated. Now it's like, this is it. So we had a lot of people, frankly, leave the company that didn't want that mission. And we have a lot of people coming in now that are very clear on that. And so people are bought in on the first day. And that part has just massively helped. And I'd say the only negative to our culture currently that we're battling with is we've gone fully remote in COVID. And there is a level of employee that traditionally could be somewhat of a mercenary, like whoever pays me gets me kind of thing. And now that they're working from home and they're not making closer relationships with their colleagues, and they're just kind of doing their job and working from their living room, someone comes in and offers them 20% more pay, why the fuck wouldn't they take it? And so that's something that we're trying to figure out to combat, because you can't just say culture and friendship, because, well, shit, my friendship on Zoom, like, what do you mean? And so we are working on getting a sort of hangout spot in LA for our team, and like doing some things, doing company trips, things like that. But I still haven't figured out, and nor have a lot of agencies are dealing with the same problem right now, where it's, we have a hiring shortage across the country. It's really hard to find people. And so everyone's poaching from each other, offering more than they should. And some companies are funded and are willing to lose money, and others aren't. And I think long-term we'll benefit from sticking to our guns, but in the short term, it creates a lot harder of a hiring process. So not that it's been devastating, but it's an issue we're working on.
And I think a lot of businesses are seeing it. I mean, we just even here, and we're based out of Ohio, and even trying to hire more people for our team. I mean, not even just marketing, just in general, and production and fulfillment and things
like
that.
Well, you're dealing with us as a competitor now on the hiring side. I don't know who you're hiring, but like, that's an example. Like, we're hiring everywhere, which so are companies. So like, we're now all of a sudden, you've got, you know, company, like, we're hiring, we have, I think, 30 something job recs open right now, but we're going anywhere in the country.
Right. Yeah. You guys have the opportunity for that. So we're just local.
Yeah,
you brought up the whole COVID in a home. I mean, are you guys, is the goal to get people back into the office, or just kind of you're going to let it kind of stay virtual and roll like that?
Yeah. It's been super efficient. We save a ton of money. Like, not having to pay office rent is kind of massive. As I mentioned, we are in escrow on a building right now that's less than 20% the size of our old office. that we'll see, but it's thankfully, you know, because it's so much smaller, it's also that much cheaper. And then you get the tax benefits, everything of owning real estate. Yep. We are looking at that for LA or for Santa Monica. And then if that works out, we may buy a, you know, small space in each, you know, in different territories to have like our own Soho house, as I've called it, event space / hangout space for people to get together.
Cool. Man, I hope you guys are really loving this episode of Making Bank. Tons of amazing information. And guys, if you're a small business entrepreneur, then this is for you. Obviously, you know, running a business is challenging. You have endless to-do lists, employees to take care of. Everybody wants your attention. And obviously, your bottom line, your profit. So first of all, kudos to you for staying on top of it, pushing through those challenges, and just really focusing on taking care of your employees and your customers. And I want to tell you about Gusto. Gusto built an easier and more affordable way to manage payroll, benefits, and more. They've helped over hundreds of thousands of businesses, even ours. Our business as well uses Gusto with tasks like automated payroll tax, filing simple direct deposits, free health insurance administration, 401ks, and cool onboarding tools. And you just name it, they got it. Gusto made it very easy. And they really care about the small business owners, the entrepreneurs like you that they work with. Their support team is attentive and very helpful. They help get us up and running smoothly and easily. And since money can be tight right now, you'll even get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Check out Gusto. Just go to Gusto, GUSTO.com/makingbank and start setting up your business today. You'll see what I mean when I say easy, guys. 90% of the customers that switch to Gusto say it was very easy. And 85% of the customers running payroll, it's now even easier than their previous company that they've worked with. So again, guys, I'm super excited. They're giving you 3 months free of payroll at Gusto, GUSTO.com/makingbank.
Obviously, with the markets change, everything else, what's kind of how do you guys... You want to, your marketing for everyone is kind of, you know, what you were saying. I guess, what are you guys doing different over the other agencies out there when somebody comes to you? Like, what would, like, we've worked with different agencies, everybody from Gary Vaynerchuk to small to big and whatever it may be. When they come to you, like, what do they see different and then how do you help them differently?
Just what big differentiator is we do the right thing. That's a big one. But no, I mean, I like Gary. I think Vayner does good work. So really, we have two different segments of the market that I kind of alluded to in the beginning. There's the 99% of agencies that have no fucking clue how to do marketing, sure. Which is frankly more of our competitors because we more compete because we do work in the small and medium business space. Most of the people we're competing with are snake oil salesmen that don't know what they're doing, that tout ridiculous returns that don't actually exist and churn through clients on an every 2 to 3 month basis before the client knows what is going wrong.
Right.
And they grow these businesses, but they cash flow them and they make a few hundred grand a year. And that is a very big part of the market that's our main competitor. So how do we differentiate? We actually do good work. We actually know what we're doing. We've got scale. We've got experience. We've shown that we know how to grow a business. We've grown our own faster than almost any of our competitors. I think we're number one fastest growing marketing consultancy. And so we continue to grow really fast and build out and know how to build a business. And so we're able to bring that to our clients. How do we compete with the bigger agencies? You mentioned Vayner or even the Omnicom, WPP, et cetera.
Yeah.
We're more flexible. We're more cost effective and more flexible. So we do is month to month. Everything's a la carte. Everything's priced so that SMBs can afford it. So it's very affordable to bigger companies. And so we're just as good at, we have the same talent. We all poach from each other. So we're, you know, we have Fortune 500 marketers and we work with Fortune 100 brands, but we're cost effective and nimble and flexible. And so that's the part that's, you know, I would say we've got enough credibility now that we're getting a lot more big brands coming in. We launched a new agency arm called Hawk Z to partnered with a bunch of major TikTok stars to really help target Gen Z. And Fox is our first client for that. So cool. We're able to get these big brands because we built this credibility and have these angles. But, you know, so the selling point of being flexible and cost effective is good for the right operator and the right partner. A lot of the CMOs don't care too. And they're just going to go hire the big guy that they won't get fired for hiring. Like no one's going to get fired for hiring Gary Vaynerchuk.
Right. Yeah, of course I know him and we
Yeah, he's great.
We tested him, and it just, you know, it, their price point to where we were at, and it, we just weren't.
Well, yeah,
for us, it wasn't getting the numbers that we needed to get with what we had to pay.
Well, and that's the, you know, the issue is if you're a small and medium business, it's really hard because he's focused on Diageo and Planters Peanuts, not SMBs. And we've had this conversation. Like he wouldn't, if he heard this, he wouldn't be anti either. Like that is not their focus.
Right.
For a while, we would work with them. They would basically, anyone that wasn't spending enough that they could take them on as a client, they just send to us. And then they want Sasha, which is like their SMB consultancy, but it's like a very different model.
It is. Oh yeah, for sure. So we got a few minutes left. Let's kind of wrap up maybe some cool strategies, tips, tactics, anything marketing wise you want to share, people that are watching. Everybody watching here, you probably has an e-com business. So
yeah, don't get addicted to advertising, like social search, like the ROAS, I think is such a dumb metric because don't get me wrong. It's a good metric to optimize your advertising to get the right thing out of it. But return on ad spend, if I run retargeting, it's going to have a much better return on ad spend than top of the funnel. Like people look at this as like the end all be all of their numbers. And really all that matters getting back to the basics is your cost to acquire customer and your lifetime value. Your CAC and LTV, which means optimizing your funnel, optimizing your conversion, optimizing your lifetime value, which comes through lifecycle marketing, it comes through content, it comes through merchandising and how you merchandise your business. These are the metrics that really matter. And I do believe the next couple of years are going to be really painful on top of the funnel because all these big brands are going to start marching into digital more and more and more, especially with what COVID accelerated. And now all these small brands are going to all of a sudden be competing with much more with P&G and Unilever and Nike and all these guys. And so the prices are going to go up because they know how to do lifetime value and they can afford to spend more because they have those metrics. You've got to start competing on those metrics too and figuring out how do I drive more LTV out of these customers I'm acquiring so that as the customer acquisition cost goes up, you can raise your LTV. And that ratio is really the most critical point. So like even if your CAC doubles, well then double your LTV and you'll be fine. And that's,
right.
That's the concept that I think a lot of people miss. And the other thing is with the new iOS update and iOS 14 and Facebook, Facebook tracking changed from 28 days to 7. People seem to really miss this. So everyone's like, oh, my advertising's gone to shit. My ROAS is in the toilet. And we're like, you're tracking 7 instead of 28 days. Like if you just change that one thing, it's going to look worse. That's what happened.
Right.
This is not difficult, but it apparently is difficult. So like understand that like, what understand the nuance of your numbers. Don't just take your numbers at face value and freak out. Like really dive into what it means and use them as indicators, not deciding factors. That's the biggest thing. It's like if your ROAS has declined, understand why and figure out what the move is. Don't just like abandon ship. You know, it'd be like if your gas gauge is empty on an airplane, but the airplane engine hasn't cut out yet. You don't just jump out of the airplane. You probably take a beat and figure out what's going on. Maybe your gauge is just broken.
Right. Before a parachute.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's great. Cool. Where can people get more information about what you have going on with Hawk Media and everything?
Really easy. Just hawkmedia.com, hawkemedia.com. You can sign up to, we can always do a free consultation. I'm on all social media platforms @Eric Huberman. Easy to find.
Awesome. And then one last thing, something you're like, oh man, I was hoping Josh was going to ask me this question, but he didn't. So I really want to share this with everybody before we leave.
Yeah. Since you said a lot of people watching or listening, are e-commerce people, ecomweek.la. We're hosting the second annual e-commerce week with the city of LA, and we're doing it all virtually still this year. So that's September 27th to October 1st. Some of the biggest e-commerce operators in the world, some of the biggest brands coming in for a full week of virtual sessions. It's all free. So we're going to officially announce it in July, but you can sign up for sort of notifications right now at just ecomweek.la. So a lot of really fun celebrities and big operators coming in. So should be awesome.
Ah, yeah, that sounds super cool. I'll have to check it out for sure. Guys, I hope you guys are listening to what Eric was talking about today. Make sure you guys go back, watch, listen to this again, take those notes, hear what he's saying. Some of the things that he's ran into growing his business, some of the successes and just advice that he's pulled to being able to grow from 7 people where he started to over 200 people now in multiple cities and one of the largest agencies out there. So Eric, again, thanks for your time today and just really appreciate you coming on Making Bank.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
I am Josh Felber. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.